I love to see all of you. I've known you for years. But it's been recently I've been laid up. I've been to the hospital 3 times. Once for an open heart surgery, in which I have a new valve, a new aorta valve. I hear once in a while, you hear me say, "Moo." That's the cow valve speaking. I had a choice between a pig valve and a cow valve. I picked the cow valve. And then they didn't like my Italian food. I don't know why, because I love Italian food. I had a gallbladder replaced. And then, as if somebody's trying to stop me in everything I do, I had an operation on both eyes. And so, here I am. I planned this service for many, many months. And I'm glad brethren saw fit that I followed this powerful text. And Jerry, you inspired me for many, many things. But the one thing you inspired me was all the beautiful pictures you had and the illustrations. I'm going to make an illustration, but you could see that I'm not an artist. But you'll get the point. Now the text that they selected for the convention is right here, if you haven't noticed it already. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would tell you. I go to prepare a place for you, and I will come again and receive you unto myself, so that where I am, you will be there too. How many of you know where you'll be living in 500 years? Raise your hands. How many of you know that? That's it. Will you be living in your son's house? Your beautiful house? Your house that you spend a lot of time on? All the repairs and all the painting and all? You got to leave that behind. How about your money? You've been saving money? Got good investments? You got to leave that. They don't use money up there. You got to leave your money behind, your house behind, everything that you think are valuable. You've consecrated and you're a part of the Christ body. They don't use those things down from here up there. You agree? Well, Jesus tells us what our home will be. He says, in my Father's house, there are many mansions. Now, what's a mansion? First, there are many people who gather together to execute a function for God. So many, I'm going to try to use the board here. Here is one mansion, here's another mansion, here's another. Jesus, there are many mansions there. And he says, I'm going to prepare a place for you. He's talking to you and me. We're not talking Israel. We know there is a role for Israel, but we're talking about our future home. I'm going to make it a little larger over here. And I'm going to call it the Christ Mansion. And Joe Migas helped me with this, with some of the lettering on this, make it larger. Can you see that, Joe? Okay. We're going to go living in the Christ Mansion. I put that label together because I think that's what's going to be the Christ in there. That's where you're going to live. Not in these other mansions. There are a lot of mansions there because Jesus said there are many. But we're going to be living in that. You're living down here. You got money. You got a home. You got a car. But you got to leave them all behind to live up there as your future home. In John's Gospel, the Lord named this expression, mentions 14 times in his three chapters of between 14 and 16. The expression mansion occurs 17 times in Matthew, 6 times in Luke, 3 times in parables, but none in John's Gospel. But John wasn't around with Jesus. And you know he had a lot to say about Jesus, his Gospel. Where did he learn that? He learned it from Peter. He learned it from Peter in Antioch. They were together for 2 years. And so I don't know about the conversation they had, but Peter must have asked him, John, to put these together. So you can call John's Gospel Peter's Gospel too and be correct. This is a powerful promise. Don't let it get through your fingers. It's so important. Let me just say something about eternity. How do you define eternity? With another word that you don't know, infinite. How do you define infinite? It's kind of hard for me to see that. But if you draw a line, just a little line like this, and say that's 75 years of life. That's the male equivalent for the life expectancy. Women are living to 80, you know, life expectancy. Let's say something about women over men. Now, if I were to define eternity with that line, how would you define it? What would you say? I'm going to say it in terms of a measurement. A line like this. Eternity. It's a line we can draw around this room. I'd love to do that. I did it in conventions in Europe once. Threw it right along, and I got an applause for it, by the way. First and last, I got an applause for it. I says, eternity, let me tell you what I show you what it is. I drew it right along. Do it the second time. Do it the third time. Do it the fourth time. Go outside the building. Go around the building a couple of times. Go not around the building. Go around Phoenix. Draw that line. Keep going. Have you ended yet? No. Draw it around the earth. Draw it around the solar system. Draw it around the universe. And you haven't ended yet. And the Lord is asking you, give your 75 years for that. Who's generous here? You know, we're talking about destiny. That's your destiny. But you know, if you don't make it, because I'm going to talk a little about that tomorrow, if you don't make it, you lose something awesome. We have the only time there'll be a change of nature in the human family. There are not many, many changes for humans. That's the only, and the humans that will remain have what we have. It's worth everything you got. Your houses, your money, everything. Don't let it slip through your fingers. The word heaven in Hebrew is shamayas. Shamayas. In Greek, it's Ouranos. There are 5 applications for this word, heaven. I'm going to try to put it on so you'll get a sense of the whole picture. There are 5 applications. In other words, you got to be careful when you use the word heaven. What do you mean? You know, I saw a book being advertised by a man who I think the title of the book is 90 Minutes in Heaven. I don't know, anybody read that book? Pastor. Nominal system. 90 Minutes in Heaven. I was curious about that. What's he got to say about that? Well, he claims that when he was in an accident, and in the accident, his soul went to heaven for 90 minutes. And the people who greeted him were all friends of his. So they all extended their hand, you know, to greet him and so forth. And he saw his mother. There she is. She extended her hand, and she saw that she had all five fingers, but in real life, she lost two fingers. So she said, "Oh, my mother has her hands restored." And when I saw that, that's the end. She was describing the earth. There's no hands in heaven. That's human. That's human qualities. That's down over here. Let's not project what's in up there. We know so little of what's up there. We'll talk about some of the things. But we know there are mansions. Now, mansions is a place, but it's a spiritual place. It's not like Phoenix. Sorry, Phoenix disqualifies. It's not like Phoenix, and it's not like New York and Connecticut. But they are places. Best I can come up with is there are groups of people who function for God in a certain way. And it's a place. Place where groups of people, groups of beings that are spiritual, they gather together. So when we say the Christ mansion, you now know what I mean. The Christ mansion is where you're going to be living. Make it. Talk about that tomorrow. Even the great company class will be in this mansion. They're not human anymore. You know, when we gave ourselves to the Lord in consecration, we said we're going to where the Lord lives. Both a great company class, but there'll be two degrees, two levels. One will have divine nature and one will not. One will have angelic nature. So the word in Hebrew is shamayas. In Greek, it's Arana, so there are five applications. But we got to bring out some of the ones that, not to get confused. The first application is the Ecclesia. Jerry, you think you have problems, huh? Ecclesiastical heavens. The ecclesiastical heavens are still down here on earth, even though there are people that said it's on a planet. That's where Satan is. Satan's not in heaven, the spiritual heaven. He was thrown out of that. He lives somewhere else. Now, you got your guess. Some say Pluto. Some say... I don't think so. I'm putting it in the atmosphere. They're right here on the earth, in the atmosphere. Satan and his demons. Okay, the ecclesiastical heaven. Then we have the visionary heavens. The visionary. Paul had that. And we shouldn't say he's the only one, but he may be the only one, but we're the only one in record. The Lord has many of his people that he uses. But the visionary application was where Paul, this is in 2 Corinthians 12, 2-4, where Paul was transported to see and hear things which he was not permitted to reveal. He was told, don't tell anybody this, but I'm going to show you something that nobody has seen. We believe the third dispensation of the plan of the ages. That's what we think of this. I don't think he saw what was in God's house, because human beings can't see a spiritual being. We got to get that notion clear. You cannot see. So what he saw was the third dispensation of the plan of God. He was seeing our period of time, so on. So that's the ecclesiastical heavens. Then we have the atmospheric heavens. Atmospheric. the atmospheric heavens. Now, if we did this correctly, we should have layers. There are three layers. There is the troposphere, there is the stratosphere, and there is the ionosphere. Three applications of the heavens. And each one has a density that varies until it becomes ions, which are electrically organized particles. That's the atmospheric heaven. The starry heavens. Now that's what's between here. The starry heavens. That's a star. That's a star. That's a star. It's an interface between the spiritual heavens and the atmospheric heavens. That's a star. How many stars are there? Science, they use notation like that. 10 to the 23rd, meaning 23 zeros after one. Put one down and write 23. Did I do that to impress you? One. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. That's how many stars there are out there. And those you can see. Oh, another feature then we have. This spiritual heaven is divided. This is invisible. And this is visible. You cannot see anything. And in fact, there's a scripture that talks about the Lord sealed the stars. Meaning you can't, the stars don't go there and neither can you go through there. So the starry heaven, science has now identified roughly 100 billion galaxies, 100 billion stars in each galaxy, in each galaxy. If you're not impressed, I'll say that again. In each galaxy, there's 100 billion stars. And they have, science has now indicated that there's a planet for each star. There may be others, but there is one planet. Just like our planet is a member of our star. And this is the visible universe. These are impressed numbers. I'm impressed even to cite them. That's the starry heavens. But more than that, look at the motions. The movements. You know, it was Isaac Newton. Somebody, Jerry mentioned about Isaac Newton. He's a good Bible student. He didn't have the truth. He says the stars were all fixed. You don't know how they got there, but they were all fixed. They weren't moving. And then there was a man by the name of Edwin Hubble who noticed there were differences. Some of the stars were moving. And he began to identify they were moving in waves. Some waves are going through. Other waves are cooler. Other waves were warmer. That's how he said if the ones that are warmer came from a hot source, the ones that are cooler must have come later on. And therefore came out with the Big Bang Theory. In other words, these stars are in a wave like these. And this is T1, temperature 1, temperature 2, temperature 3, temperature 4. And you notice that T1 is hotter than T2. It's hotter than T3. which is hotter than T4, and so on. And because these waves were different, he then issued the theory of the Big Bang. There once was, way, way back, I don't even know how long, but it's certainly more than 15 billion years. But there once was an atomic seed that God used, exploded it, started, began the whole universe, the visible universe. And so there's motion. Not only are these bodies big, but there's motion. You go 75 miles an hour today, get a ticket. But do you know that the whole galaxy, our galaxy, Milky Way galaxy, moves at the rate of 500,000 miles per hour? The Earth spins around the sun about 67,000 miles per hour in 365 days. The universe is cold out there. You think it was cold in Connecticut. Out there it's minus 460. So these are just characteristics of the universe. We've got two universes. By the way, there's a very popular physicist who is crippled. Can't use his body, but he can still use his mind. He's a very brilliant man. Steve Hawkins. I'm sure you've heard of him. And he said that he's looking for the origin of things. He said that there are two parallel universes. Two parallel. Well, it's amazing. But he's right. This is scriptural. There's the visible universe and the invisible universe. And he uses a text, Isaiah 14:13. The heavens within the heavens. That's what I'm speaking of. I'm trying to define that. There are others have now adopted his theory. And lo and behold, who else do you think? But Einstein did too. Einstein followed Isaac Newton. Single fixed star. Stein says, no, we think they're all moving. It all came from one source. See, a lot of the scientists don't want to admit that, because to say that is to say that there is a God. So let's talk a little bit about the spiritual heaven up there. This is an invisible heaven. It can't be seen with the naked eye. This is beyond the physical and starry heavens. It is where God and his angels live. And his angels, they are invisible. We believe in them because we have faith. That's a good definition of faith, by the way. You want to know how to define faith? You believe in the invisible. You can't see it. You can't prove it. We believe in a lot of things we can't see. Can you see God? Yeah, you believe in him. Can you see angels? And you believe in them. Can you see gravity? You know right now you were captured by gravity? If it wasn't for gravity, you'd be floating up to the ceilings. Coming through, I think. Okay, that's back. No, you can't see the invisible things. By definition, that's the definition of faith. Believing in something you can't see. Well, it's got something to do with even with Jesus in his second advent. A lot of people don't believe in Jesus in the second present because you don't see him. Prove that Jesus is present. Prove it scientifically. We got some professional people here. Can you do it? Especially when you have scriptures that say, Jesus with his own words says, the world seeth me no more. You'll never see Jesus as a human being. It's gone. Don't picture Jesus in that cross. You couldn't as a symbol, but he's no longer on the cross. I remember going to my wife's cousin's funeral, and we wanted to go just to pay our respects to our cousin. We sat in the back of a Catholic church, but as we walked in, just at the entrance, was a big cross, and Jesus was on that cross. He's not on the cross. He's never going to be on the cross. He has accomplished that wonderful experience of redemption. So you're never going to see him again. Now people are looking for him to come down in the clouds. Now you might say, well, what body would he use? Would he use the dead body? I don't think so. So the Apostle Paul says that Jesus has immortality. The Apostle Paul says also, that was in 1 Timothy 6:16, the Apostle Paul stated that the invisible things from the creation of the world are not clearly seen, but understood and things. And then in Exodus 33:20, the Lord says to Moses, no man can see me and live. I wasn't indicating a punishment. It's just saying I have a power of divine nature. We'll get into it shortly when we talk about divine nature. Shortly, I have a power human beings can't handle. Well, you know, you can experience that. Look at the sun more than 3 minutes. Directly at the sun, not the shadow of the sun. Look at the sun and for 3 minutes. You know what will happen? Go blind. I mean, come on, we're talking the sun. What about a divine being? And they're telling, Jesus is telling that you cannot see me. How do you prove something without doubt? Prove that there's a spiritual world exists. Can you prove to somebody that spiritual world exists? Mathematics can't even really this can be put into an equation. I think Steve Hawkins is looking for a mathematical equation. He's not going to find it. Statistics can't use it because spiritual phenomena, it's not countable. You could see the numbers we're talking about. 10 to the 23rd power. You can argue about the points, but you cannot see them. So Lucifer, when he rebelled, he says, I want to exalt myself above the stars of God. He didn't say, I want to be within the stars of God. He says, I want to go above that, up here, where he is. He got thrown out by that statement, by him. Forever. Demise is yet to be seen. But it suggests that the stars and the galaxies and the meteors and the constellations are not in his realm. The celestial bodies are physical and visible. God put a seal, Job 9:7. God put a seal around the stars to suggest a definite containment and separation of visible elements from them. The reason it's coming from science. Science has declared there is a universe beyond the universe. That's the double universes we're talking about. Two universes. They're beginning to getting to see this a little more accurately. And then there were Edward Hubble. The planes of life. We've seen motion. We've seen the elements of it. The planes of life. I see five planes to life. The divine life, which I will go through very shortly. The angelic life is two. Human life is three. Plant life is four. And cellular life is five. The angels. How many angels are there? You got any idea? I don't. I just know there's a lot of them. A lot of them. Daniel gave us some insight. He says, in Daniel 7:10, he's 10,000 times 10,000 in one sitting in front of God. You know how much 10,000 times 10,000? It's 10 million angels just in one sitting in front of God. Paul says in Hebrews 12:23, to an innumerable company of angels, that's in the millions. Now let me say something about the guardian angels. It says in Psalm 34:7, guardian angels are assigned to those who are inheritors of salvation. It's you and me. We all have a guardian angel. By the way, where are they? Where are we here? Did they go back to Rome? Where do you think they are? Up in the ceiling, sister? Sitting with you? Next to you? You got an empty chair there. Where are they? Outside? Anybody got an idea where they are? Scriptures say they encampeth around those. They're all around. But they're around, aren't they? Okay, we got to talk about how they function. Guardian angels are messengers of God. So God doesn't speak to you directly. He speaks to the angels. The angels give him the information he needs. Guardian angels guard against troubles. Unless there's some reason that the trouble will be eliminated. Guardian angels will even be used to chastise. The sixth one, guardian angels are involved in answering problems brought out by prayer. Guardian angels do give strength and encouragement. You know, Jesus had a guardian angel. Does anyone remember his name? Gabriel. Correct. Gabriel was there when he was born. He wanted to make sure that nothing was going to happen there. And that same Gabriel was there at the cross. Yes. And remember, don't blame the Romans. Italians putting Jesus on the cross. Don't blame the Jews putting Jesus on the cross. Who put Jesus on the cross? He did. He said it. No one taketh my life from me. I give it. He could have called millions of angels to stop the whole thing. He says, don't. I'm doing this for some other reason. For God's will. It was God that wanted them on the cross. Pay for the redemption price. Guardian angels do give strength and encouragement. Guardian angels are instructors. They teach us. Experiences that we have are supposed to be for teachers. Guardian angels can be helpful in some of our human perplexities. Guardian angels minister the sick and the dying. You know, I think I mentioned I've been in the hospital 3 times before coming here. And first time was an open heart surgery, and the second time was the gallbladder, and the third time was my eyes. It was after the open heart surgery. I was out because they gave me a lot of anesthesia, and that's the reason why I had that problem, stroke. And so in that period, as I remember, I couldn't tell anything. My brain didn't say anything except I had a dream. I dreamt that Jesus was laying down next to me. And I started talking to him. I says, Lord, is it time that I come with you? And I heard the voice say, if you have pain, You will say on earth, if you don't have pain, you will come with me. That's all I remember. There's nothing else I remember. And maybe it was me. No question it was me. I don't think Jesus was laying next to me. But I had this dream. And then when I woke up, I forgot it, and I recalled it later on. And so the guardian angels are there. We have a tough time. I got to get to the divine nature. All angels are created by God. And it stopped. The creation of angels stopped with the creation of Adam. There's been no angels. Job 38:2 says this. This means angels are not being created since. Now we're getting a lot of thoughts about babies that die. They're automatically become angels. And we're getting a lot of statements about people who assigned to do a task, and they leave heaven to complete the task and to return to that task. Angels have many attributes, but they're different. The seraphims are different than the cherubims, different than the archangels. They're part of the mansions up there. The mansions of the cherubims and the seraphims, they have, even though they're angelic in nature, there's variations about them. Let me just talk once more about the functions of the human parts before we go on to divine nature. The human being is really a remarkable creature. I don't think we appreciate it, even though we are humans. There are certain things, for example, the eyes. They can blink 15 times, and they still don't interfere with what you're seeing. The eyes can distinguish between 300,000 different colors. The eyes can see a small candle around 50 miles away. The ears. Ears work in pairs to collect the vibrations. Ears can detect 1,500 different tones. 350 degrees of loudness. It can sense the direction of sound based on arrival of another sound. The tongue can extend approximately 4 inches long. 4 inches it can extend out and come back with no difficulty. The tongue can distinguish between 1,000 different tastes. We're remarkably created. God really put something in us. The brain is only 3 pounds in weight, and it contains 100 billion cells. Men can produce 2,500,000 sperm and produce that. And women have 400 eggs at birth. They can have 400 children if they wanted to. God made enough of it. I mean, we have 2, and I think. Okay, let me talk about divine nature before the chairman comes up here. If you think you've got a great body, and we do have a great body, problem is it's sick and it's imperfect and we have to follow. But if you are capable and worthy of getting a divine body, you are getting something that's great. Divine nature is very similar to God and Jesus. Not like the angels and not like the humans, but like God and angels. I won't be tempted to say that they are part of the Godhead or anything like that. They're not. God is God, and nothing can ever take that place. but they have the same nature. Divine nature is life without end, and we know my definition of eternity, wrapping around, building. Third is that divine nature never gets tired like we do. Why do you think we go to sleep at night? Go to sleep to rest. But it's really, we say rest, but really it's bring about our energy level. Bring it up high so we can... So divine nature never gets tired. Abundant energy. You don't have to sleep. Nor eat. We don't have to put any food in heaven. You could try to put food up there, but divine people don't have to eat. They have life within themselves. It's a closed circuit. A divine teacher will have a beauty and holiness, and the capital will be the capital of the universe. To say that God is the God of the universe, Christ's mansion will perform the functions of rehabilitating the earth for the expectations of God. There'll be no sins. They're the ones that are going to do it. Jesus and you. You're there. You have it tough. You're going to be given some skills that you never had. But the divine nature can tell whether a person is lying. It'll make judging easier. Divine life is not without end. Divine nature is a nature never gets tired. I mentioned that. Divine nature has a beauty that we can't imagine. Divine nature have a does not have pain. They do not experience pain. Divine natures will have skills beyond the human skills like God. The skills of transparency. You will know if someone is lying. The skill of super planner as you will see the future. Skill of a problem solver as you will help in solving the problems. I'm going to end with a story. Story of the naturalist who went walking through the woods one day and encountered a turkey farm. Maybe some of you remember that story. So as he approached the farm, it was all caged in. He looked at all the turkeys, and there they were eating. That's all they do is eat. And he noticed amongst them there was an eagle, at least what it looked like an eagle. So he called the farmer. He says, "Mr. Farmer, you got an eagle in that turkey farm." "Ah, no, he's a turkey." "Oh, he's an eagle." He says, "Well, naturalist says, let me take him out of that farm and let me see if he is." So they took him out. Naturalist put him on the arm, and the naturalist talked to the eagle. "Eagle, eagle, thou art an eagle. Spread out thy wings and fly." The eagle looked around, seeing but the turkey's eating. So with one lunge, he flew right back in and started eating with the turkeys. And the farmer says, "See, I told you he was a turkey." So he says, "No, let's take him out again." He took him out this time at the bottom of a mountain. And there he was. He had the eagle on his arm. "His eagle, eagle, thou art an eagle. Spread out thy wings and fly." And again, he looked around and didn't see any turkeys. He began to shiver and shake. The farmer says, the naturalist says, "I know what the problem is. Let's go to the top of the mountain." And as they went up to the top, took the farmer with them, took the eagle with them. This time there was the sun that was there. And he says to the eagle, "Eagle, eagle, thou art an eagle. spread out thy wings and fly. This time the eagle saw the sun, and not the turkeys, but the sun. He spread out his wings. He got a new strength, a new transition, and he spread out his wing and he flew to the sun. That's a lesson for us. Don't eat with the turkeys. Spread out thy wings. Fly.